Renat Strahlhofer is a former telecommunications marketer turned fearless activist who crossed over to the other side, so to speak, after she became aware of the extent of industry corruption. I'd previously interviewed Renat with Healthroom for Humanity, and she also participated in the Way Forward Summit. And I also published a YouTube-only video where we talked about the true intentions of Elon Musk a while back. So I've talked to Renat quite a bit, and you're probably familiar with her. But if not, she is a spokeswoman for the Northern Rivers for Safe Technology Group, a mom and the creator of the global We Are Not Sam campaign, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with. Renat is passionate about blowing the lid on how big telecommunication industry has used a fraudulent test to license mobile phones and wireless technology to push technology that causes untold damage on multiple fronts. The focus of our conversation today is on technology, but it's on mindful use of technology and Renat's new app, Lively. Lively's aim is to create a powerful shift in how we experience our lives, pausing to look up, reconnecting with ourselves, with each other, and the vibrant world around us. Through the lens of science and digital wellness, and with the help of our expert guest speakers, Lively explores the complex relationship we have with our technology. Our mission is to offer a path towards healthier habits, empowering us to step back and make more intentional use of technology. So that's from Lively's website, which you can check out at livelifelively.co. And for our conversation today, of course, we talked about Lively, but we also talked about habit formation, 15 signs you're losing digital control, basically 15 signs that you're addicted to technology, worldwide statistics on technology use, which some of the stats that Renat read off were pretty alarming, I have to say. And then also, most importantly, using technology with focused attention and intention. Like the internet was when it was first invented, or at least first released to the public back in the day, a lot of people said this is going to be the end of society. But of course, the internet has brought us a lot of amazing things, right? It's brought us the ability to connect, for you to listen to this podcast, for you to find truthful information. And of course, it can be used for nefarious purposes. And I think the same can really be said about pretty much all technology. For most technology devices, but it's all about how you use them. It's all about the conscious use of it. It's just a tool, and it can be used for bad or for good. And so what we talk about today with Renat is how we use technology with focused attention and intention. It was an awesome conversation. I always love talking with Renat. Again, it's like having a casual conversation with a friend. And I definitely recommend checking out the Lively app. And you can find that again at livelifelively.co, or you can just download the app in the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store. Enjoy the episode. Listen to the language of the last 3.5 years. Lockdowns, travel restrictions, stay-at-home orders. This rhetoric, written by government agencies and corporate media, speaks to a clear intention, a concerted effort to keep us in place. Fortunately for us, a real grassroots movement powered by real men and women can never be stopped, because mankind will always find the way forward. And this is where it all starts. With the Way Forward's new membership platform, you can connect with like-minded community and like-minded businesses near you by simply typing in your zip or postal code and setting a radius. We also have a marketplace featuring the best holistic health brands and products with deals you won't find anywhere else. And the best part is, you pay whatever you want to be a part of it. The Way Forward starts with a growing community coming together to share ideas, form local groups, and conduct business with like-minded men and women. Because if we're constantly being told what to do by so-called authorities, it's easy to feel helpless. But it's essential to know that we're not. Each of us has the power, and that power amplifies when we come together. There are many more health-conscious and sovereign-minded men and women than we realize, and this is where we all meet. Visit thewayforward.com to join virtually, connect locally, and pay whatever you want to be a part of it. This is The Way Forward. Renat, thank you for joining me again. How many times have I interviewed you? I don't know. I think this is the fourth. This is the fourth, yeah. Because with Health Freedom for Humanity, with the Way Forward Summit, with, is this the fourth?
No, Elon Musk. And now
Elon Musk. So this is the fourth. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
This is the fourth. Okay. Yeah. I'm stoked for this conversation, legitimately, not just saying that just for the sake of saying it, because I know you gave me a little sneak preview of what we're going to get into in this, and it's something that's been on my heart and mind lately, as I shared with you before we click record, with respect to, you know, I don't like labels, but the space that we're in, being a thought leader, so to speak, in the truther space or health freedom advocate, whatever. I've felt that I'm missing a lot of joy and fun in my life. And I've sort of taken on this identity and felt myself being pulled into being a certain way and avoiding doing things that I'd loved previously. As an example that I was sharing before, I threw on college football this last weekend and was watching college football. And, you know, I was sort of pushing that side of me. I grew up as an athlete. I was a professional athlete at one point in time, away, because much of the truther space considers it bread and circus. So I'm like hindering my opportunities to do things that I legitimately joined. So I threw on college football and was watching college football. I'm like, I love football. Like, I love watching football. I love playing pickup basketball. These are things that I truly enjoy doing. And I love it because it's an expression for me. For me to play sports, but also to watch it. It's an artistic expression for me to watch athletes doing what they do best. Maybe the referees rig the games and things like this. I'm not disputing the possibility of that, but I just love watching sports. So without going too far into that, because I'm very passionate about sports, let's get into what you've created. And let's go wherever you want to go with this.
Yeah, I just want to say also, you know, I think there's a lot of talk around, you know, I love the analogy of like the wild salmon and how, you know, they struggle to go upstream every year, and they, you know, they navigate all these, you know, roaring rapids and the currents and all of that. And I feel like that's what we've been on in the last few years. It feels upstreamy, and it's also where you find your power and it's like your path home and all of those beautiful metaphors. But, you know, whether you're dead or alive, you can go downstream, but only a living thing can go against it. And I think that it's a huge testament to the last few years that we've been able to do that. So I definitely think that, and I know you would agree, like looking back, it's not a question of like, I wish I didn't, I wish I had more fun. It's more like I noticed I was more aware of my power, but I've also missed that feeling of just downstream enjoyment, you know, like that kind of real, oh, wow. Like, what are all these things that I love about life? Like when I'm not trying to educate or trying to create new things, what do I just enjoy watching or participating in when it comes to life? And then I started to realize, like, you know, with all the work that I've done with We Are Not Sam and many different campaigns over the last 5 years, I started to realize like, oh, I want to have that feeling back in my body, that childlike adventure and curiosity and joy, which I think is the biggest vulnerability I've ever had in my life is with joy. It's my tolerance for happiness. And that probably sounds really bizarre to people, but it's like, how often do you allow yourself to completely crack open to let the stream of joy enter without feeling like, oh, I should be humble, oh, I should be doing this instead, or be more focused, productive, all the things, right?
Do you think that stems from, like for me, I've noticed the same thing, and that stems from feelings of unworthiness as a child, one. And then I would say the second thing is, I think it's just, especially in Western cultures, this mentality of work, 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 work. And I would say more Americanized Western cultures, because I lived in Germany for some time and they had a better work-life balance, but it's this incessant need, self-imposed need to continue to work, 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 that is, I think, a product of the system where they want us to be working, working, working to feed their, you know, their exploitation of us.
Yeah. And I mean, in terms of my upbringing and sort of, you know, going into those depths, I think I've always sort of been raised as like, it's more important to be productive than happy. You know, the productivity side of it is like, what are you offering the world? And so obviously, you know, campaigning these last few years has ignited that even more. And I think that oftentimes people think they're running away from their shadow or their dark side, but often, more often than not, they're actually running away from their bright side. Is sort of what I've started to notice in myself. And then when I open those conversations up to very close family and friends, it's very common, at least with my circle. And I think that's part of the reclamation. It's like that part of coming back to the intimacy of the whole. I don't think that, you know, just follow the love and light and just feel good is the answer. I think that if we can become intimate with the parts of ourselves that we have, say, allowed the shadow to hold for us, as Xavier Dagba talks about, he talks about how, you know, the shadow, your shadow was a holding place for like humiliation and guilt and pain that you weren't able to carry as a child. And so the part of our journey that we go through is we go and meet those parts of ourselves and become intimate and loving towards it so that we can integrate it back in into the light. And I think that's a really beautiful metaphor to look at it, because a lot of the time, if we are campaigning and Joan of Arcing and all of those things, we tend to look so much at the darkness that we forget, oh my gosh, there's all this beauty around and I just need to step outside. You know, I need to go for a walk where I live in the hinterlands on the beach and everything feels calm and it feels beautiful and the real life is there for us to experience. But, you know, the vortex of, let's say, online or trauma often takes us back to those moments in our life where we didn't feel good enough or we didn't feel that we were worthy enough, like you talked about. And I think we all have that. That's how we relate to each other oftentimes, is that we can kind of like understand and empathize that we've all got those parts of ourselves that we've repressed and that we're all looking for ways to kind of love those parts of ourselves again. And I think that's been a really big piece of it for me for the last year since we've last spoken. And also the journey piece that I went on to really develop this idea of lively. So you asked me like, what, how did I get to this and what is this, you know? So basically it comes down to me for like intentionality. So I think that if you, whatever you do with life, you know, we know that life is complicated, it's messy, it's beautiful, it's all the things, right? But so is technology. And so oftentimes how we are in our, you know, intentionality expresses itself in all different forms of life. And so for me personally, I decided to speak to people that I really admired and ask them, like, how are you living life lively? What would you, how would you describe yourself and the way in which you feel you live life lively, you participate in life intentionally? And oftentimes the people that have that intentionality have a really great balance, have a really great perspective of what it is that they're doing with their lives, how they look at their lives, their relationships, the intimacy, the friendships, the work, everything. And so I started to realize like all this work that I was doing with We Are Not Sam, which was educating on corruption and trying to put the power back into people's hands when it came to safety, I went deeper and I thought, well, what is it about safety within me that feels like what's my relationship to safety? You know, am I online because I feel unsafe and I have to campaign because of my safety? Are they doing these corrupt safety tests? And then I'm reflecting back my inability to feel safety. Yeah. So it just starts to mirror itself. And so that's what we start to see with life, is like oftentimes the things that we're participating in and the ways in which we're participating in it is sort of like the thing that we're fighting against, the thing that we want most. And so I realized I really wanted safety.
What clicked? And what I was like, whoa, mic drop.
Because I think growing up, it was like an all or nothing approach for me, you know, sure. Like it was, you don't come home with an A, you come home with an A+. Like it was an overachieving.
I got grounded for a whole summer because I didn't get straight A's. So I 100%, I hear you.
So, you know, yep. You know, and so that approach isn't a long-term, you know, solution, you know, all or nothing can, you know, you can work for certain diets for a very small period of time. You can't even digitally detox, you know, permanently. You can do it for a week or whatever it is, right? But if you pick any goal, like we talked about weight loss, you want to lose weight, we all know, you know, well, maybe cut out the chocolate, the chips, the burgers, the donuts or whatever, and you might be good for a period of time. But there's a good chance that the weight's going to come back on if you haven't explored that relationship relationship with food that needs to be worked on. And so where I got to was, okay, well, if you have a problem with chocolate, you eat 20 bars of chocolate a day, you don't blame the chocolate. Any great health practitioner will say, let's explore your relationship with chocolate. And then you start to realize you don't have to cut out the chocolate. You just have to have a better relationship to it. And so therefore the body, you know, we know this with German New Medicine, many other, you know, different alternative paradigms. But I think the perspective was around attention. And so once I got to intentionality, I was like, oh, okay, so attention is our greatest currency. And I definitely know that as a marketer because that's my job. And there's approximately like 4.1 thousand or something like that clicks of sponsored Instagram posts per minute. So we're paying, like, you know, we're paying for that attention. They're paying for that attention. And so because it's our greatest currency, if we look at it as constantly being sucked in and getting stuck and feeling like, oh, it's not my choice, I'm just trying to keep up. And we look at technology, we look at life in general, and we say, well, there's certain things that are convenient, they're helpful, they enhance my creativity and productivity. Like if you're a musician and you spend a whole day in a studio and you're fully immersed, amazing. But then, you know, the question is like, do we use it or does it use us? And that's where Lively came to be, because I was like, oh my God, I'm noticing where I'm putting my attention. I'm noticing it, therefore that's intentional. And I'm going to create an app for that. And what a humbling piece for me, for most people thinking I'm trying to help them get off technology or try to cut down technology rather than cut it out. And I'm like, oh, what a humility piece for me. I'm actually going to create an app and meet people where they're at to help them understand how to navigate this in an intentional attention way, but also in a way that focuses on what matters. And there are so many different categories for how we use technology in life. And it really isn't, it's not, there's no such thing as a category where technology doesn't even exist. So because it's all about creating healthy digital habits, we decided, you know, what's 28 days to experience different habits? And then I'm like, oh my God, I need to explore habits. Cause I thought I understood habits. And I was like, oh no, I don't. Because I've been trying to campaign about like pointing fingers and then going, okay, so I've pointed the finger at these corrupt, you know, FCC and ARPA and all of these things. And so now I'm like, well, hang on a second. When I put the power back in my hands, what happens then? Oh, I have to change my habits. That's a lot harder than pointing finger at someone else. I'm like, yeah. I'm going to explore habits, right? Yeah. So where does technology have an impact in my life? It impacts my time management, my focus, the way I work, my productivity, my stress levels, my sleep, the way I use my, you know, the way I take care of myself, my relaxation.
If you haven't added this one, I would add your ability to process trauma and feel feelings, because so many people use it to cope when they don't want to feel something.
Absolutely. And because we're designed to feel and think and, you know, experience it all, like the idea that I am not my feelings, I am not my thoughts, never resonated with me, because I'm like, oh my God, I'm having this somatic, beautiful human bodily experience and my body is giving me information at all times. So this is the greatest technology of all, right? My body is this incredible antenna of information. I can pick up, I can receive, I can transmit, I can resonate with people. I believe very much in resonant energy transfer. I feel like, you know, why we yawn and why we laugh with one another. And it's like we're resonant beings. And so what does technology do is allows us to resonate. But when it's taking over that process of, I guess I would say, like, where we lose connection with people and we scroll, like I said recently, that, you know, we're not even chewing on technology, we're like swallowing it whole, you know. Yeah. So the idea that we have to process food the same way we process information, like our bodies need time to process. And so because we are swallowing it whole and we're consuming it in this really unhealthy fast food way, and then we're wondering why all of those categories are suffering, is because there is no, I guess, intentionality and attention on the ways in which we're consuming. And when there is, there's a different way of consuming technology in a really healthy way. And so then I started to explore what are all the healthy ways to consume technology. And we created 28 days, which were basically 28 ways to become digitally conscious. And it just resonated with people. We're like, oh, great, these solutions are really working for me. And so then I thought, well, how do we go one step deeper? Like, how do you change a habit? You go do it for 28 days straight. So we developed categories for all of those that I just mentioned, and we're creating all these different, I guess, challenges for people to experience over 28 days, you know, the same challenge over 28 days to notice like what happens with the habits. Because I went really deep into it, I can even tell you what happens with the brain as a result of, you know, habit stacking. And it's so fascinating.
Tell me. Yeah? I want to hear.
Yeah. Okay. So I think it's around 40%. It was like a Duke University did a study, and it was around 40% of your actions are not actually conscious decisions. So they're habits. So that's a really big part of our life, and hence why technology has become a habit, right? It's just something habitual. You wake up in the morning, 70% of people sleep with their phones next to their bed, and within 10 minutes, you've picked up your phone, even before you've kissed your partner or your kids. That's a habit. So out of nowhere, that's just become something that you've done because you practiced it for 28 days and then it just became something you do, like brushing your teeth. And so there was a great book that was a best-selling book by a guy called James Clear, and he wrote a book called Atomic Habits. And he says, like, it talks about like the outcomes as like lagging measures of your habits. So in other words, like, and I don't know how people will take this, but basically this is how he says it. He says that your net worth is measured basically of your, you know, your weight is lagging measure of your eating habits. Your knowledge is a lagging measure of your learning habits. Your clutter is a lagging measure of your cleaning habits, et cetera, et cetera. So what you get is what you repeat, right? So you start to look at your life and you're like, well, I must have repeated so many of these things that now it's what I just do. So if you want better results, you actually, he says that you've got to forget about setting goals. And I was just like, what? Straight A student over here, no setting goals. What? So like you focus on the system instead, and something within that resonated with me. And I was like, oh, okay. So he goes, you know, to improve, you know, for good, you need to like solve problems at the systems level. And I was like, cool. All right, here we go. So you fix the inputs and the outputs will fix themselves.
Okay.
And so goals are really good if you want to set a direction. So you're winning the game, like you're setting the goal to win the game, I guess. Mm-hmm. But the purpose of the system building is to play the game. Mm-hmm. And I was like, cool. All right. So if I'm not putting the pressure on myself of like constantly, this is a New Year's resolution time of the year, right? Goal setting, all the things, right? And I actually went into this year for the first time in my adult life going, I'm going to be experiencing something that I've never done before. And I'm not going to try to like think about all these accomplishments. What if I actually spent the time, you know, thinking about the cycle of this endless refinement and continuous improvement that I actually really love deep down? So my commitment to the process rather than the outcome, right?
Wow. That makes sense.
Yeah. And I was like, that feels really good. Like that I know that it's never going to stop and I don't have to look back and go, I didn't do this or I did do this. But like, wow, the progress, like what an incredible way to start the year. And so we know that making a choice that's like 1% better or 1% worse, it seems maybe insignificant in the moment. But, you know, if you span it across a lifetime, it's the difference between who you are and who you could be. And so these are like these incremental shifts. And I really love these like small percentage shifts because it's like that is actually the product of a daily habit. It's not a once in a lifetime or once in a year transformation that you're going for. You're actually going for the steps, you know, where people tell you take one step in front of the other. It's like that's what they mean, right? So, and now just to get into the science behind it, which I found so fascinating, and obviously what is so heavily integrated in Lively, is day 1 to 7 is your initial like a trigger action loop. So like in 1 week, your brain, it like forges like smart connections between your cues and your actions. So in that first week, you're basically established, you're doing the same thing like for 7 days. Let's say, for example, you decide that you're not going to click a heart emoji on a phone. Instead, you're going to give a compliment every single day for 28 days to people in real life. I'm going to challenge myself to do that, because for too long, I'm clicking a heart, I'm scrolling, I'm leaving a comment, but like, what's the impact of actually eye-to-eye contact and giving someone a compliment, whatever it is, someone you know, someone that you've seen at the cafe, you know, someone that's worked and served you coffee that you've never really, like all these little things that you're starting to notice. I'm like, who am I going to compliment? You know what I mean? And so during that first week, your primary, like your basic, your primary thing is that you're establishing the initial track, the action loop. So you're starting to create the loop. And this is when you decide to perform the habit in response to a trigger. So your brain starts to associate the cue with the action. You're like, oh, you're giving compliments today. Oh, you gave a compliment tomorrow. Like, so you're doing it over like 7 days. You're like, oh, your brain's starting to notice you're like doing compliments, right?
Yeah.
And so then day 8 to 14 comes around, and then you're strengthening those pathways. So your brain begins to think, oh, I've associated something within me with that habit. So you repeat it, and then those neural pathways are being reinforced. And around that second week, that's when your brain actually begins to strengthen those pathways that are associated with, oh, I'm picking up that this is now a habit. So you're consistent now. And so that's being reinforced. And so there's a sense of routine coming through by that stage between the day 8 and day 14. What's interesting about day 15 to 21 is that it's like a resistance and persistence. It's like when you're trying to, like, your brain's trying to warn you. It's like, warning, warning. It's like old habits starts to resurface where you're like, oh, I'd rather just not do this, or like, I'd rather just, you know, this is meaningless. And so there's this lapse of like, oh, maybe I'm not going to be consistent. And so that's really crucial in 15 to 21, because it's this third week, it's this common encounter with like, I'm going to resist the temptation and revert to my old ways of just not doing this stuff. And so your brain will start to associate like with previous behaviors to try to get you away from it. Right. And this is all,
you know,
like,
this is common in people who water fast too, though, that they say if they do it like 27 day, which is what Lauren Lockman recommends, that around the third and sometimes the fourth week is when typically people, all of their addictions, even addictions that they thought they had recovered from a long time ago, a lot of it starts coming to the surface again. They start having the desire to indulge in those things.
Yeah,
that's interesting. I wonder what that is. I wonder like why that time frame. It's interesting.
Yeah. And there was a journal article from like Nature Neuroscience, and it was in 2016. And I think it was Anne, I might get the last name wrong, but it was like Graybell or something like that. Anyway, so she was talking about how like old habits don't disappear, but they become overshadowed by the new forming habit. So it's at this particular time frame where the old habits are like trying to kick back in because they're about to go, like they're about to like see themselves kind of like become redundant. So then after day 15 to 21, you're in day 22 to 28, and that is the habit integration. So that's week 4. And it's basically becomes quite seamless to find that habit into your daily routine. You start to notice it. You thank your brain for the adaptation. All those types of things start happening by nature. And so this new habit, because it's integrated in your daily routine, it's less of that conscious effort and thought. So I think they call it neuroplasticity. And that's like your brain's ability to reorganize itself. And it's a really big role during that whole 28-day period, obviously, because it's basically how habits become automatic through that neuroplasticity of the brain adapting to a repeated behavior. And so the more pride, and this is like what we came back to at the beginning of this interview, Alec, is like, how do you feel like the joy and the pride? I mean, that's just something that you've got to find in yourself. And so habits are a really easy way. If you're forming new habits, it's like this way to feel really proud of yourself. And so because of that, there's a particular aspect of your identity that the more you're motivated, you will maintain habits because you're like, you're proud of yourself. And so that's, you know, if you're proud of how your hair looks, you know, you're going to develop a sort of habit to take care of and maintain your hair. And the same with if it's your biceps or, you know, your skin or whatever. So you become proud of the way those things look, and therefore, you know, you knit scarves more, or, you know, all the things, right? So when you get pride involved, which is a massive part of habits, it's like you fight tooth and nail to basically maintain habits that make you feel those good feelings. And so because we've got habits in our lives, especially with technology, that don't feel good, that we are on autopilot and repeating, we tend to, on the opposite end, like you know, binge screen and binge eat and get lazier and get more angry and just like look at the world in a negative way. And all those things start to spiral because we start thinking that those are the things that are making us feel bad, when it's just the formation of all these bad habits that haven't been like tempted by new habits.
And then we get into a self-sabotaging pattern where we shame ourselves, and then it just perpetuates the cycle. And that's the responsibility piece.
That's why I love the idea of understanding habits, is because it's not on the rest of the world to be better so you feel good, which I know is nothing that, you know, doesn't sound familiar to your audience already. But it's the idea of like, okay, well, how do I take responsibility? Well, one of the fastest ways is to actually become more curious and interested in all the new habits that are available, because you have to have a good deep dive think into a lot of the things that aren't working for you and go, right, well, what am I going to do to create new habits every day? And this is a really great strategy to do that.
And it's like becomes a fun, creative, scientific or experimental pursuit at that point too. And a thing that came up for me when you were describing how the pride that lays the foundation for the formation of these habits, what happens in that, I'd imagine, if we look at it from a, you know, Joe Dispenza or Bruce Lipton-esque lens, is that we are then putting ourselves in the mindset as if that feeling we want to experience, or that thing, that goal that we may or may not need at this point, I guess, according to what you've learned, we want to achieve, is already happening. We're helping to create that reality on a day-to-day basis when we have that pride is sort of entrenched into our psyche and we're focusing on that which we want and then developing habits around it. So not only does it reinforce the physical creation, the neurochemistry, I don't think it's all just chemistry, it's not all chemicals, but you get what I'm saying. It also reinforces the metaphysical thought leading to material creation aspect of it too.
Yeah. And that's how we play the game. That's the playing part. It's because it's like, oh, wow, you're noticing those things. And it's like, wow, this actually makes a difference. And it's different and it's enjoyable because it's not familiar. And the thing is that we actually prefer the potential for success than proven success. Anything that you've already done and you've conquered is not as interesting to you as the potential. So habits are always about like creating the potential for something that gives you more of that, you know, joy and more of that ease and more of that kind of feeling of, you know, self-worth and pride and all the things that at the end of the day is still a really great feeling. You know, whether you're going downstream and you're capable of going upstream, you should enjoy both, you know. And the idea that we should avoid anything that's hard or take on everything that feels with ease and feels light, it's because we are whole beings. It's like we have to understand that wholeness is far more important than ease. It's like I understand the ease part of me. I understand the pulling up and the pulling against and I don't try to fight it. But what I do is I try to understand how I can create more habits in my life that actually make it more lively for me, which is what lively is about. It's like the intentionality. So we're coming back to, where am I putting my attention? What am I doing that can create a different type of attention? And if that attention is our currency, then we create a life that's full of intention.
I love that so much. And yeah. So one more thing to sort of reinforce this idea that you're picking at, that it's not actually the end state that we love. It's the process. Cause that's kind of what you said earlier. And also what you've said now. And I saw this, ironically, this reel that someone showed me the other day, which was a really good one, where this guy said, you are already, or what did he say? You've already accomplished several of the things your former self told you would make you happy. And it's like, are we actually supposed to love the end state? Like, oh, just when we get to that, then we'll be happy. No, it's the process itself that we are intended to find happiness within. It's and that's sort of what reinforces the creation of habits, I'd imagine too.
Yeah. And it was Jim Rohn that said that motivation is what gets you started. Habits is what keeps you going. Mm-hmm. So you know, setting an intention is great to start, you know, to start the engine, but to keep you going is you have to notice that something is feeling like a shift, and it's and it's a shift in a way that has made your life feel more good, really, you know. And these are the things that when we expect a lot out of the world and a little out of ourselves, you know, that is where we really hit the self-sabotage button. You know, it's where it's actually the opposite. It's like life is a lot more like wow and reverent if we expect a lot of out of ourselves, a lot more than we expect out of the world. And that's a paradigm that a lot of people aren't ready to hear because, you know, if it's just about technology, for example, you know, I was watching, my husband was laughing like uncontrollably. I've never seen him laugh. I mean, I have seen him laugh that hard, but it was just like, it's been a long time since he laughed that hard. And he was just like choking on like he couldn't even handle it. And he was looking at something on his phone. He was just absolutely in complete joy and laughter. And it was like this Snapchat challenge of like holding water in your mouth and looking at all the different filters with your friends, with whoever spat out the water laughed the most would lose or something. And it was like these three women, and it was absolutely hilarious when I watched it as well. And so the idea is that like, we don't, you know, the idea of habits is not to take life more seriously, by the way, because it might seem like you've got to be, it sounds like productive work. It's not. A lot of the time we're forming habits around things that make us really laugh and things that make us feel really human, you know, and the human experience isn't all about love and light, but it's also about like you said before, like the shadow stuff and becoming more intimate with repressed things. But at the same time, it's also just kind of like letting loose and letting joy in and becoming more tolerant to happiness. And so there's no judgment of technology. It's definitely not in a position to tell people, you know, you've got to get off technology. This isn't what the message is about. It's the relationship with it. It's the intentionality behind it. And technology, I think for you and I, most definitely, it does improve our lives, but it's not becoming our lives. We don't feel ourselves like completely warped into the tech world where your only identity is online. And for a lot of people, sadly, that is the case. And that's what the science is showing. You know, we have to look at technology as like a Nobel Prize winner. His name's Christian Lang. And he said that technology is a useful servant, but a dangerous master. And so if we understand that with that comes a lot of responsibility, and we take that responsibility very seriously in that process of, I'm going to take a deeper dive into myself, into my bodily experience. Because what is a habit at the end of the day? It's something that makes you feel something. So if you don't want to feel your body because you think it's more important to just be the awareness and be completely still and not have feelings and thoughts, it's like the idea of forming habits is that you train yourself to feel more and to think even more. And so that's the unfolding, which is, I think, a really beautiful thing if we look at it on a really on its deepest level, because there is always going to be a pull, you know, whether it's a digital pull or whether it's a pull from like the traumas of your life or your family. I mean, a lot of people just spent, you know, the holiday season with family, and I'm sure a lot of people listening would have had certain triggers pulled. And there's lots of ways, there's a lot of indicators of unhealthy habits. And instead of actually just sitting with it and looking at it, that's step one. But then you're like, okay, I've acknowledged it. I see you. I feel you. And it's like, well, now what can I do to create new pathways, new healthy habits? And so that is what's been really interesting for me coming into this year. It's like, oh, I see. Like habits is something that I've overlooked for a very, very long time.
And how do we, within the context of technology and forming habits, you mentioned 15 signs you're losing digital control. Can we talk about that now?
Absolutely.
Those are, I guess I would imagine, indications or in actuality, bad habits that we've formed around technology.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people may not want to use the word addiction when it comes to technology, and that's okay. I'm definitely not in a position to qualify where people's usage is, but this is more about like what I'm going to get into now, which is 15 that you just mentioned, like 15 signs you're losing some of that digital control that you may think you have. Is I'm going to guide you through like 15 different posts, you know. The first one is like the scrolling habit in the morning. So every morning begins with, most times, a familiar habit or a ritual, okay? And that is the smartphone scroll. So if your day kicks off and, you know, you're diving into your phone rather than like, you know, giving your loved one a hug or a kiss, you know, this is very often the case. In fact, the studies show that 71% of people check their phones within 10 minutes of waking up and before they've even kissed their partner hello.
71%. Wow.
Okay. So that is a habit for a huge chunk of the population, right? And not a hard one to break in 28 days, I think you'd agree, right? So because we see technology as an extension of ourselves, like when we wake up, it's almost like we have to wake up technology with us, and that's not the case. So there's a sign. I'm just talking about the signs. I'm not going to talk about solutions until after this. So I'll just give you the signs first. The second one is like what I like to call the phantom vibration. So, you know, you've convinced you've felt your phone vibrate, but when you check, there's like no notification, there's no message. It's like a phantom vibration. It's like a clear sign that your phone holds too much power and sway over your attention, that you're thinking that it needs you, right? You're like, I'm just checking because I'm pretty sure it's vibrating. And I got a notification. It's just like a phantom vibration, which a lot of people will understand. The third thing is like this anxiety-induced notification. So it's like a ding, beep, beep, bong, bong, whatever. That sound or these notification sounds, they should not become synonymous with anxiety, because 40% of young adults get anxiety because they haven't responded to a bing, ding, beep notification, like a message. Yeah. And so
it's crazy because I can find examples of that within myself though too. It's like, holy shit, I've experienced that before. I can't say that I haven't.
Yeah, of course. And yeah. I'm speaking from experience here. So when we're putting these things together, it's from experience, right? So No one's speaking from the perspective, even with habits, as someone that's never had a bad habit or somebody that's never experienced these signs of losing control. The reason we offer these, I guess, this information is because we can empathize with it. Right? Yeah. We've all been there. And so this is why it's important to consider these roles that we have with, you know, how we participate in those notifications. It's a massive thing. And again, these people start to notice what these losing control signs are, and then their brain's already trying to think of solutions. So I mean, just ask people to like hold off on thinking about solutions until we can recognize some of these signs, right? So the fourth thing is like the compulsive checker. So, you know, checking your phone every few minutes, even when there's no alert. So that's a classic sign. It's just like, I've just got to pick up my phone to check. It's not even a notification. You're just checking. You don't think there's been a notification. You just want to see if there's anyone that needs you, right? And the fifth thing is mind scrolling syndrome, or in other words, mindless scrolling syndrome. So that's, you know, an hour passes and, you know, it's unnoticed by you. You've been scrolling through social media, for example, and that's robbed you of, let's say, a precious moment or an opportunity for a meaningful experience. Let's say your kid wanted your attention or your partner was doing something you could have participated in. And then you just like, you get kind of overwhelmed with guilt because you're like, oh shit, that was an hour. That's just passed, and you don't even know where the time went. And then you start to feel the guilt kick in because you're like, wow, that went really fast. So the sixth thing is the dinner table distraction. So you've reserved a seat at the table for your phone, and it's often stealing the show because if there's nothing interesting going on at the table or you're a bit bored, the phone's right there for you to, you know, dab into. And so mealtimes, which are meant to be for connection, your phone is put in its place, right? Now, we know that the statistics are showing, this is from GeekWire, they did a big article about it last year, and that was that 32% of kids have reported feeling unimportant when it comes to their parents checking their phones.
It's so sad, and I'll say this, like, this is me calling myself out. When I was doing the end of COVID, I was obviously, like, very immersed in a project, so it's uncharacteristic, but when I was doing the end of COVID, there was a couple of times where my daughter, my two-year-old, was like, Daddy, put your phone down. I'm like, I felt like shit when she was saying that. And luckily, like, we have a really good habits in our family of like, we don't allow anyone to have technology at the dinner table. But like, I remember thinking back to that, like, Daddy, put your phone down. It made me feel awful.
Yeah. Exactly. And I remember when I spoke to Kelly Brogan about it, she said to me, it's meant to feel awful. Like, that's a good sign. So you shouldn't take that as a bad sign. We should take that as a good sign, because it's meant to feel awful so that you go, oh, hang on. Something in my body is telling me this isn't probably a good indicator for me. Yeah. Like, so we should reverse that and go, right, well, the fact that you even noticed it is a huge win, right? Mm-hmm. So the seventh thing is bedtime battles. So instead of, you know, enjoying those, you know, the restful slumber, like you're locked in a battle with your phone. So that's late night scrolling, the blue lights, all the things. And it does give you that feeling of feeling drained right at the end of the night. And because blue light disrupts your sleep patterns, and we're talking about reducing melatonin by up to 58% when you're on your phone at night. That is huge. I want people to hear that again. It's reducing melatonin production by up to 58%. Okay. Now, the next thing, number eight, is where did my time go syndrome? So if you find yourself wondering, you know, like where hours or days went, obviously it can mean that you've got excessive use of technology. So the idea that you're like, I don't know where the last few hours went, but you know, the only thing you've done is be on the phone. That's where did my time go? Where people go, where did the time just go? It's like, you know where it went. But that's what we tend to say, is like, where did it go? And so the ninth thing is you're experiencing FONS, which is the fear of not sharing, right? And that's got you in your grip, because you've experienced something, you want to get your phone out, you want to share it on social media, and it keeps you glued to your device to see how many likes you get and clicks and all the things. And so because
I've been there, I will 100% say it. And I'm like, not now. I think I kind of joke that my page is turning into a shit posting page where I don't even like care. And I just say what I want. And if people don't like it, I don't care, but I've been there 100% on that too.
And this is like so common, like, honestly, like even if it's not even hard, but it's beautiful. Like, it may be your daughter walking for the first time, and the first thing you do is you grab your phone to capture it on camera. It's like, I've got a fear that I don't capture this moment, that like, oh my God, it's a fear. Like,
have you seen that one
fear?
This is again ironic, a meme of it's a bunch of people at a sporting event or something like that, and they all have their phones out, and then there's an elderly lady in the front row who doesn't have her phone, and she's just like taking in the moment.
Yeah. So we've got that picture on one of our blogs. It was the Boston Globe did it, actually. It was a really famous picture, and she's got her purple glasses, and she's leaning over the gate, and everyone's just like filming, and she's just like smiling and watching it for herself. It was
taking it in.
It's a very telling image. Yeah, it's really well.
I've had this happen to me, and this is so trippy, and it makes me hate it even more. That where I have done that, of course, like every one of us has done that, where we've taken a video of our kid doing something that, you know, is we want to remember, right? But then I get messed up in that my mind remembers the video rather than the event. And I hate that so much.
Yeah.
Have you ever had that experience?
Oh, so much. Like,
you don't actually remember the event happening anymore. You remember the video on your phone rather than the event.
Yeah, it's true. And then you start to look at the experience through a very narrow lens. So you look at the experience of life through this little box, when there's this huge periphery of things that are happening at the, like spontaneously at the same time that you can't see. Like with whale watching season, I think I told you about once, which is like people just like filming the whale, and then it can't even see the real whale because this device is between you and the experience. And when I asked Kelly Brogan, why do we think that happens? She said it's because we don't have practice of holding that pleasure in our bodies. So that's a really big one, because oftentimes being seen as like enjoying and being completely immersed and enveloped in the moment is seen as like, oh, but I could have like saved it, you know, like the saving. Yeah. And that's a rescuer, right? Even for the phone can be a rescuer. It's like, I've got to save that. I've got to save this for like future, you know, memory. But it's a really interesting one. And I think, most people would be able to relate with that being an experience of just like, boom, take the phone. And then it's like, I'm in that little box of my point of view for that split moment. And so the 10th thing is the social media envy. Now, I'm not suggesting that comparing online is necessarily a bad thing, because sometimes it gets you to level up, and you know, there is something called comparisonitis, and it's basically where everyone presents their perfect image of themselves on social media and et cetera. But I think comparison becomes your daily ritual as you scroll. So it becomes like a habit where you're going on to compare. What are people doing compared to my life? And that's something that's become even more common, because we're so, I guess, unfamiliar with our own journey that we follow other people's stories and we're almost cheering them on at times as well, because you like, it's like watching a movie where you're like the protagonist or whoever, like you're like rooting for somebody, because it's a way to distract from actually doing it for ourselves.
Mm.
Okay. The 11th thing is neglecting real life connections. So your loved one, you know, they voice some sort of concern about your phone use. You're always on the phone, and it's a sign that, you know, you're neglecting something of a connection, right? And so you justify, yeah, but I've got to do this, but. And it's like, we can just sit with the fact that, yeah, I'm recognizing that right now I'm doing this thing intentionally, but like instead we just excuse it. So we neglect an excuse, right?
And for those of us who use, what I found, for those of us who use devices for work, right? For our work, so to speak, like me, like you, we have to learn to check ourselves, because there is times where like we legitimately have to be doing that, or like it requires our attention right now. We have a project that needs to be done where we might need to say, hey, sweetie, hey, you know, to our son, our daughter, our partner, that, hey, I need to give this focus right now.
Correct.
But we also don't want to become the boy who cried wolf, where we're constantly using that as an excuse. And it's like, okay, you're bullshitting yourself now. We all know that Big Ag is poisoning our food supply, and Big Pharma's so-called medicine is straight up poison. What most people aren't aware of, though, is that most supplements are also filled with artificial sweeteners, dyes, GMOs, glyphosate, and a host of other toxic ingredients, even many of the more natural supplements. My good buddy James Benefico dedicated his life to crafting the world's cleanest, most nutritious organic supplements after a pre-workout energy drink caused heart palpitations so severe that he almost landed up in the ER. Organic Muscle was born, revolutionizing sports nutrition by using exclusively non-GMO ingredients from USDA organic farms. Since then, tens of thousands of people, including myself, have leveled up their fitness and their health with Organic Muscle's award-winning natural pre-workout. There's no jitters, no heart palpitations, no itchy skin, just nourishing organic food and herb-based ingredients for clean, sustained energy, strength, endurance, and recovery. Numerous studies have shown that tonka ali is the most effective herb in the world for naturally boosting testosterone levels. And we know that testosterone levels are depleting all over the world because of what's put in the food supply, what we're exposed to. Organic Muscle has the world's first fully organic tonka ali supplement. I only support and promote things that I actually use, and I can say I legitimately use Organic Muscle products. Use code FORWARD15 at checkout for 15% off at organicmuscle.com.
It's just when we're making the excuses like, yeah, but I got to work. It's like we just have those conversations. Because a lot of the time they just want to stay online, people, and I've been in that situation so many times where I was like, I'm in the flow of something, I can't get out, and there's a tension that's required. And so that's why like 25% of US couples feels that they feel that their partners are constantly phone distracted, right? So the idea is like, how can we put it away for a moment to be able to explain the intentionality and then set like some sort of like boundary and framework to when they'll be able to get that attention. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, how do we create more of those conversations rather than just blowing up and like not addressing the pain, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of like where we're repressing, sweeping under the rug, the constant arguments that are arising from people, including our loved ones, that want our attention. So that's a big one. And then the 12th is digital double booking. So that's where you're literally double booking your time between your digital engagements and your real life commitments. So you're meant to be at some birthday party, but you're sitting in the corner on your phone. So that's double booking, basically, right? Because you're stressed, you're frazzled, you're meant to be doing this, but you're actually doing that.
I have a family member who is the worst at that. And it's like, why even don't come. I'd rather you not be here than be here and then be on your phone the entire time. Or like, we're supposed to be watching a movie together and I'd rather you just not watch the movie. And then she'll swear up and down that she's looking up the details of the movie. I'm like, can you just watch the movie? Can you just like enjoy it with us?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we've all been there. We've experienced it for sure. And then the 13th thing is work-life boundaries are blurred, which you mentioned before. So that's where, you know, you're answering work emails and messages during personal time, right? So that becomes normal. So you're sitting down to watch a movie that your partner is super excited to watch with you and you've got your phone out, but to quickly just email back and you've just lost that sort of boundary that you may be neglecting for that personal time. So that's the one that you've just mentioned. And then the 14th is the security blanket syndrome. So you can sit alone without your phone. And because your phone is often your security blanket, it's like, how do you embrace solitude? Like literally, can you go somewhere, even like leave your phone at home and go somewhere for 10 minutes on a walk completely on your own and with your thoughts and feelings or whatever else, without the security blanket of a phone, without the excuse of what if there's an emergency or any of that kind of stuff. So it's like, can you sit alone without your phone? It's really big for a lot of people, right? Because it has to be within arm's reach. It's oftentimes the case. So the last thing is the stalker tendency. stalking someone online is not what I'm necessarily saying. You know, it's the excessive digital attachment. So like we're stalking our phones, right? So this is like this energy of like, oh, I've got to self-improve or I've got, you know, all these things that I need to do. So I've got to stalk my own phone, right? So it's this indicator of like basic activities like spending time outdoors or in the fresh air. We know these things have a positive impact, but we stalk our phone instead. Like, so we just like, kind of like walk around the house like a stalker with our phones, right? So this is what we address. You know, we talk about these things with Lively because these are signs. So we're not saying this is not about shaming people, not at all, because what we offer is an unlimited amount of solutions, right? So how do we embrace the ability for us to change habits? How do we embrace the fact that it doesn't have to be that way? So it's not like you look at those things and you go, well, that's just how it is. There's going to be a cohort of people that go, I'd be curious to see how I could change that. Like, what are some examples of how I could, you know, create new habits and all these things? Yeah. And they'll get to become more curious. And then once they get through the first week, second week, third week, and finally the fourth week, then they're like on autopilot. If people that never floss their teeth, if they do it for 28 days, on the 29th day, they grab that floss without even thinking about it, right? It doesn't require as much effort. So these are the signs, because one of the main reasons people feel that they're not, let's say, the word addicted, because we don't like to use the word addicted because it's automatically attuned to, you know, food or alcohol or drugs or like things that like basically can kill people. And I think when we talk about the digital pull and losing control because of that pull, then we can all sort of like start to come to the table a bit more and we can discuss this illusion of like, oh yeah, I feel like I'm constantly keeping up, and this shift towards using that tech mindfully is something that intuitively we all want. We took to the streets, we did vox pops with people, we asked them all these random, you know, did you know stat questions, and they were all so honest and so engaged with it all, because it's something that touches every single person, whether you're a child all the way to a grandmother. Technology is impacting your life in some way, whether you're the grandmother that wants the attention of a teenager that wants to be gaming, because we've got, you know, 3 billion gamers, 60 million of them are considered medically addicted. You know, we have.
By the way, on that point, do you know that there is actually a common back issue now where teenagers are getting stretch marks in their the lower parts of their back from being hunched over gaming?
Yeah. I mean, chiropractors have now a new term for neck, because we're on a downward pull, right? So we're not looking up and looking out at the world. We're pulling, literally our heads are being drawn into this device, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's called tech neck. So chiropractors are often having to correct what's called tech neck. Oh, wow. And so we're recognizing our body is speaking to us all the time. You know, our body is giving us like, why do we feel so bad when we do this? Or why is my neck in so much pain? Like, so, you know, a lot of the time you'll go to get a massage and they'll say to you, oh, do you spend a lot of time in the computer? Go, yeah, okay, well, I'll just give you a massage. So we're getting kind of more in tune with the fact like this is just like business as usual, but it doesn't have to be. And that's, I guess, the point, because how do we live life? You know, what we're not... We talked about this before. It's not an all or nothing approach, right? This is not what this is about. This is basically a goal. You know, you're creating a goal to play the game. So you start the engine, you go, right, okay, there are elements of the way in which I interact with technology. The statistics are very alarming for kids, which I'll get into in just a minute because I think that will really surprise people. But at the end of the day, the transformation is possible. So, okay, I'm going to choose the empowerment piece, right? So that's a major part of our lives. I'm not going to separate my life and my digital life. Like, it makes no sense, right? So life is everything. And so we create boundaries around all of it, and we create, you know, plans and ideas, all of it. We should not be thinking about separating these things as if you can. You can't. Like, I'm on this computer right now talking to you. I'm going to be working later on this computer. I'm going to go for a walk later on. I'm going to catch up with my girlfriends for dinner. Like, it's not a separate thing. It's just integrated into life. And so therefore, when we start to notice the habits, we're not trying to separate things out. What we're trying to do is just create new ones that feel like, oh, this is a better use of my day and my time and my stress levels and like all the things, right? So that's where the landscape, you know, we know of statistics around technology, you know, whether it's attention, you talked about gaming just before, but loneliness or your focus and things like that. We know the statistics around technology is overwhelmingly negative, right? It's not like people would think that technology, we know that it's engineered for, you know, a lot of these algorithms are engineered to keep you on and sell you things and all the things, right? So, but we're responding with the Lively app, and that is around evidence-backed daily challenges. So all of this is backed by evidence, and it's, you know, we've spoken to people from all different avenues of wellness, you know, talking about digital wellness, talking about their life in general. We've created all this content because at the end of the day, it's not about disconnecting from technology, which is often portrayed in the media as the extreme. We don't need to talk about extremes if we're, what we're doing is taking those 1% that we talked about before, because the extreme scares people. Oh, they're going to get me off my phone. No, we're going to keep you on your phone. Actually, go on social media more intentionally, right? Rather than less intentionally. That's just the scale. It's like more of something rather than less of something. And so when we understand that as like a balancing act, then it's not a separate conversation. It's not a conversation of like, okay, I need to remove something. I need to stop eating chocolate or stop eating, you know, digesting, consuming, whatever. So that is the fact that we've got levels of oxytocin, so the love hormone, you know, this, we love our technology. It gives us these levels of oxytocin. So we have to address the fact that there's a love affair going on here, right? And it is absolutely, our oxytocin levels are actually the highest upon waking. So if I say to you 70% of people grab their phone within the first 10 minutes of waking, that's your love hormone. It's at its highest upon waking. And the first thing you're loving is your phone. Right? Wow. You're loving the screens, and we have to be really honest about it. And that's not to say, okay, well, if you don't want to change it, you know, you don't have to. But for those people that are like, Jesus, I do that. And maybe what would be different if I didn't do that? And that's what we explore, all the ways that those first 10 minutes are different. You know,
how could how could that little change in giving that love immediately to my partner impact my relationship?
Totally. And you've interviewed Vincent Tolman, and he talks about the hour of power. It's like the first half an hour when you wake up and the half an hour before bed is considered to be the most sacred hour of the day, right? It literally, the way our mood, the way our connection, everything throughout the day will be determined on the first half an hour and the last half an hour before we go to sleep. And so because most of that time is spent on devices, it is literally constricting our ability to connect. And we've got 210 million people worldwide that admit to suffering addiction to social media, right? So if we've got what is it, 66%? It's probably higher now because this was done about a year and a half ago, this study, but it's 66% of the world's population that show signs of what's called nomophobia. And that's literally no mobile phone phobia, so being without a phone, whether the phone is losing reception, you can't remember where you put it, you left it in the car, or you left it at home. That fear of not being with it is causing so much anxiety to the people that have mobile phones all around the world, right? And so addressing that anxiety, that relationship that is feeding you, it's giving you something, and it's not all negative, but the relationship we have with it is the exploration piece. And so when people say, where's technology going? It can only go as far as our relationship to it. Wow. That's as far as it goes.
The same can be said about so many things, like where is government going or this tyrannical agenda going? It can only go as far as our relationship to it and how much we engage with it and how much we perpetuate it.
Correct.
The choice is all on us. Like, it really is.
100%. And you know, I'll give you some interesting facts, which I'm thinking your audience will really enjoy as well. But like, if you leave your Wi-Fi on at night, right, it disrupts your sleep patterns. It reduces the sleep stages by 50%.
I believe.
Literally a flick of a button
because
at night.
Because we sleep with ours off. And I noticed that like when we go other places, I also have weird ass dreams, by the way, mm-hmm. when I go other places. I'm wondering if that's like a weird, I don't know. I don't want to get too conspiratorial, but I don't believe it. I've experienced it myself because we sleep with ours off at night.
And it doesn't take long to experience the difference. I mean, literally you just get into a habit for 28 days to switch off your Wi-Fi at night and then send me a message and let me know how your sleep's going. Right.
Have you heard of also switch? I know this is not related to Wi-Fi or telecommunication stuff specifically, but it's EMF. Another friend of mine, I can't believe I've never thought of this, switches off his breaker every night too on like various parts of his house and only keeps on like the breaker for his air conditioning, if he has air conditioning inside his house, and then for like one area of his house for his appliances and stuff.
I think they call it a kill switch. Is that right?
Yeah, kill switch. It's like this switch that like covers sections of your home. I don't know if that's how they do it in Australia.
Yeah, but we've definitely got that here.
Yeah, he switches his off at night and he said he sleeps way better and his house is like dead silent too.
Mm. Yeah. So anything that's basically, most things that are connected. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we've got to remember, like in America, you've got 22 connected devices on average in a house. So it's a lot.
It's insane.
It's a lot. Like you think about your Bluetooth speaker, your iPad, your laptop, your Wi-Fi, your baby monitor. Like I'm not saying you, I'm saying generally.
No, I'm counting in my head ours though too. I'm trying to think of.
Yeah.
No, we don't have 22. We definitely don't have 22, especially because like our TVs are hooked up via Ethernet. This computer's hooked up via Ethernet. We have Wi-Fi only at a small area of our home. Damn, 22. That is crazy though. 22 devices in one house.
Yeah. That's the average.
And that's the average.
Yeah, that's the average. So let's talk about like focus for a second as well, because sleep is an easy one. You know, obviously switching off the Wi-Fi, you're going to start noticing a massive difference. And if you do create a tech-free bedtime routine, in other words, like, you know, if you have that consistency and you create those habits, which we obviously help you do, then you can actually, this is so interesting with the science, it increases lifespan by up to 3 years.
Wow.
That's how significant these little shifts are. They're not like these percentages I'm throwing out are huge percentages for a slight shift in your daily habit, right? Mm-hmm. So focus, I want to get into, because that is such a big one that I'm constantly being asked about. And it's like, it takes us, this is the University of California, they did a study about it a year ago, and it said that it takes us 23 minutes to refocus if we've been interrupted, you know, and we have all day, every day we're being interrupted. And so if an interruption takes you onto something else and then you're multitasking and swapping your brain power around, and it's the equivalent scientifically of dropping 10 IQ points.
What's so frustrating about reels and like TikTok videos is that it's just reinforcing that paradigm where everyone's attention span is only 90 seconds. So literally no one has any attention span whatsoever. And we're, like you said, we're constantly being interrupted where people can't focus. And then the end result is, I made this post like a couple weeks ago, that because of that, people are wanting to be spoon-fed everything. Like, just give me, which again puts the responsibility on someone else to learn any given thing or to up level on any given thing or, you know, heal.
Yeah.
It's people cannot just focus on one thing to learn and digest anymore.
Correct. I had this analogy. I said to a friend of mine, it's like, at least with spoon feeding, you're picking up a spoon, you're dipping it in and you're putting it into someone's mouth. Like these days, they just like throw the plate at your face. Like it's just, you know, like it's just straight hits you in the face. And then that's where people are thinking, oh, maybe I have attention deficit as an adult. It's like, no, you've got 17 tabs open. Three of them are frozen. You can't remember what you were doing 10 minutes ago. You don't remember what you're going to do in 5 minutes. Like, it's this constant pressure of like, I have to be able to jump from A to B to C and just like, it's endless. And so 13% of people, they can't even find their way to work without the phone showing them on the map because they're just overthinking that they're like afraid to like miss something because they're overthinking. So they put the GPS on. I mean, that's alarming. And the fact is that we absolutely check our phones every 12 minutes from the moment we wake up till we go to sleep.
Holy shit. That's crazy. Okay. So I can't say that there hasn't been times when I've been involved in a project or I've put something out that like, I haven't done that. Like, oh, I need to check. I need to get updated on it.
Mm-hmm. You know? That's right. And so we can all relate to these things. This is not a conversation around like them and us. This is all of us can relate to what we're hearing right now because
it's really amazing to even hear that coming from you though, as someone who was like involved with exposing telecommunication. It just shows how much this world, how much we're immersed into this world. And I think we had this conversation before where it's like the irony for those of us who are in this space is that they've sort of pigeonholed us to use these devices to be able to communicate the information to help people get off these devices or use these devices to expose pharmaceutical industry corruption, telecommunications industry, what's going on with the government. And it's super ironic in that like we are not required, but the rest of society is on these devices. So this is the best way to effectively communicate information to people is using these devices. And it's like, how can we check ourselves? Which is why what you've done is so perfect.
Yeah. And it's a humility piece for me as well. Like, remember, I love technology. That's why I got into telecom, right? Because I thought, wow, this is great. It's going to connect people. We're going to be able to do such incredible things. So it doesn't go away, that relationship to the possibilities, right? That takes time to like, I guess, reevaluate where that came from. And as I said to you from the beginning, like a lot of it had to do around safety for me. So, you know, in terms of loneliness, you know, because oftentimes we've got over 5 billion, I think it's now over 5 billion connected devices. This is worldwide. And still today, this is a study that I just read from Cigna and YouGov. It's 33% of people are still reporting feeling lonely. So the idea that I thought, oh, we're going to be more connected and people are going to be able to reach each other. And, you know, like we used to send postcards, we used to send letters, handwritten letters. And one of the challenges is to write a handwritten letter again. And that made people so emotional because it's such an emotional experience to use your writing on paper, your hand, your body to deliver a message in a way that you remember as a child were the things that you held on to, right? So we've got to come back to some of those pieces that are really like touching our soul again, because oftentimes like when you text someone, which is a great substitute, I love the idea, like I obviously text people, but if I write a letter, like a little handwritten card over like, you know, Christmas or New Year, and I give it to my colleagues or my family members, these things, like we can't deny that it touches you on a deeper level. It just does. There's something about it that's more touching, right? And so 18 to 20-year-olds, which are Generation Z, Gen Zs, they are the loneliest generation. And I don't think it's going to come as a shock to people given the last few years, because they would even prefer to speak to you on technology than meet with you in person. There's like a struggle there, right? They've had this stripped from them. So 79% of people are of that age group, 18 to 22, these people are reporting feelings of loneliness. And we can't pretend that technology is like this advertising, you know, this television ad of like connecting people, like what we saw for so many years. Like the reality is that technology is often getting in the way of a touch, of getting in the way of real intimacy. You know, I'll give you a funny statistic just to make it a bit lighter, but 20% of people that were put in this study, they said that they would rather go without shoes for a week than without their device for a day.
That is crazy.
Okay. Crazy. And during intimacy of 18 to 34 year olds, 24% will check their device if there's a ping, ding, or a notification during intimate moments. Very intimate moments, sexual moments.
That is crazy as hell.
So like the idea that the technology is like, it's almost like you are the master, you know, he's the master and you're the slave. That kind of presents itself very obviously in those kind of like, I guess what maybe some people may consider funnier statistics, but it actually shows just the propensity of like how deeply, I guess, disempowered we are with our boundaries. And this is again, like when we're talking about these things, it's kind of like a bit of a reality check, because at the end of the day, if I said to you, like, how many people know about, let's say, grayscale on their phone? All right. Grayscale on your phone is actually really transformative. I had a few friends just try it for a day and I thought they wouldn't be able to last even a day, but they've kept it going for like, I think it's over a week or so since I told them about it. But it's like you go into your settings, because we know that currently your settings are all about the colors. So your phone, your apps, this lolly shop, vibrant, distracting, very clever hues to play with your emotions and sap your concentration, because the colors are there, because colors in marketing as well play a huge role in your emotions, right? But when you activate grayscale in your phone's color filters and you test it for half a day, which is called the grayscale, it strips all that candy appeal and it transforms your device from this serene, beautiful, colorful Willy Wonka place to like this kind of like a bit more bland. And your eyes, you know, you're reducing the strain in your eyes. It's very mindful, because all of a sudden you're not sort of like sucked in by the colors. You're more intentional, even if it's just like gray for like a day. Right. And I'm not suggesting that people need to like go to like major extremes, but there's simple little things around how we can help ourselves focus better, which is literally, you know, even if we use the technology just to set a timer for 30 minutes where you've completely switched off notifications, you've gone on airplane mode, and you're going to focus on something for 30 minutes without the temptation or notification to look at your phone. And that is an art. That is actually an art in this day and age, to completely focus on one task at a time and experience that as a really positive thing, because if there's a satisfaction associated with like, oh, I'm going to be uninterrupted. Like, it, you know, parents crave this stuff. I mean, I'm sure you understand. It's like half an hour is like, whew. And what do we often do? Like my husband goes out with, you know, my kid to go skating. And like, you know, my temptation is, should I check what's on my phone? No, I've got half an hour. I've got an hour. Like, wow. And what we can do with that, right? So coming back to those moments is pretty powerful. And we talked about this before about like, you know, contagious, the kindness. You know, instead of like, we get a helper's high. That's something that we know through a lot of research that's been done. It's like you give someone a compliment, you get a helper's high. So it's a reciprocal feeling, right? So you compliment someone, you give them a kind word, it lights up their day. You know, if you've admired someone, you tell them that, or their style or their stride or how they make you coffee, whatever it may be. And there's like a reward part of our brain. We know this with rewards and punishments, but like the rewards part of our brain. And that actually helps with learning and, you know, productivity and all those things when that's activated. And so it helps us activate memories as well, which is the cherry on top. So we start to remember more of those moments in our lives, or we got compliments and all these things. And we start to sit more with that feeling that maybe we don't give ourselves the pride, or we don't give ourselves those feelings of safety or whatever it is, and the self-esteem. And so these helper's highs is like another way, instead of just like liking someone's post, what if you like for that day, you're going to like something about things in the real world and mention those things, you know, brighten that person's day. And if you do tend to like things on devices, you know, like someone's post, why not actually leave a really kind comment as well, rather than just the like? So there's like layers of how we can use technology intentionally, how we can bring kindness and, you know, heart emojis into the real world. And so this is what Living Lively is actually all about. So when I interview people for Lively, and they're all different walks of life, interior designers and chefs and neuroscientists and, you know, coaches and every walk of life, the people that I feel are most intentional about living and most intentional about their attention are living life lively. And what I mean by that is they're creating sacred places, sacred spaces, and sacred moments in their life. And they're intentional about it. And that doesn't mean that we don't screw it up a lot of the time, but we come back to trying to create better habits and better ways. And so this is what this Lively is designed for. It's I guess, in a way, to meet people to say, hey, we're doing this thing and it's working. Do you want to give it a go? It's actually quite interesting. And then noticing those 1% shifts and kind of enjoying the process, which we talked about at the beginning, and celebrating the process. I think that's really the gift of, I guess, the digital landscape, is that it's a mirror. Like literally your phone is a mirror, by the way. It's a black mirror, but anyways, it's a mirror. And it's designed to reflect back what it is that you're putting your intention and your attention on. And so it's not the fault of the technology and all the people out there that are trying to create whatever they're trying to create. It's the relationship. And we've come back to that many times today, because at the end of the day, what we all want, what we're all seeking on the deepest, deepest level, is a more intimate relationship with ourselves and life. Mm. And that's what Living Lively is. It's living life and it's lively. And if you and I can realize after the last few years of, like, you know, all the ups and all the downs and all the curves, and we're all standing on the mountain, we're just standing from different positions looking at the same mountain. And all we're saying is, hey, do you want to come have a look at this position over here? And hey, maybe I'm going to go have a look at that position over there. And we're all kind of like bringing each other, you know, around the mountain. You know, it's really quite beautiful in the way that we've sort of, I guess, embarked on this as a real fun piece. It's a lot of joy and there's a lot of fun in it. And I think that at the end of the day, after what we've all gone through, you know, over the last few years and wherever it goes, we're going to start to recognize that more and more the responsibility is not on somebody else to make things better for us or whatever it is. It's like, okay, how I learn about life, how I process life, how I reclaim those parts of myself, that's the biggest work there is.
Beautiful. I couldn't agree more. And it's putting, like you said, the responsibility back on us. And I had this same exact conversation with Joel Neurosimos earlier today. So many pieces of this conversation tie back to the conversation I had with them for their podcast Here for the Truth. And it ties back to another conversation I had with a good friend of mine, Dr. Devin Vrana, where we are discussing the same thing, that you know, a lot of people have predictions about what 2024 is going to be. It's going to be crazy, the election. And I don't dispute the idea that it might get a little bit wonky just as it is, but much of it is a collective of individual choices in how 2024 pans out. Likewise, like I said, when it comes to technology, when it comes to the government and its agenda and the pharmaceutical industry and your level of health, literally everything in your life, it really comes down to overwhelmingly your individual choices. And I think this is a beautiful way to teach you how to take control and self-responsibility over your own use of technology. Because it's really easy, of course, to point the finger at social media companies and the algorithms that they create and things like this. And of course, don't get me wrong, they are preying upon our unconscious decisions, but they're still our decisions. The last half of that is the most important piece. It's our decision. So how do we cultivate more responsible decisions and habits, as you say, with respect to technology? And this is beautiful. So people can find this on just any app store? at this point?
Yeah, so you can go on Apple or Google Play. We've got our website, livelifelively.co.co, and they can read more about it. And we offer great content. Like, you know, at the moment we're offering free blogs. We're about to load some free episodes of some of the lively conversations that we've had with guest speakers from around the world. And we've got really great vox pops as well. Like, we take to the streets and we ask people questions, and it's super fun and it's engaging, it's eye-opening, it's confronting. It's all the things that you'd expect. But ultimately, I think it's really recognizing that we can, instead of getting off of things, what we're doing is we're getting on intentionally. And I think that's a huge mindset shift for a lot of people. I mean, I was going to tell you earlier that the average tap swipes that we have on our phones a day is 2,617. So, you know, when I ask in a day. Yeah.
That's crazy.
And so there's a new word in the dictionary, Alec. It's called fubbing. Could you guess what that is?
No.
People go straight to like a inappropriate something or other, but it's phone snubbing. So it's fubbing with PH. It's phone snubbing. And it's so common that it's now entered all the dictionaries. And it's this idea that when you're speaking to someone and they're looking at you, you just grab your phone and you're just on your device, or you're ordering coffee and you're still on your device. Like, you're not interacting and you're interrupted by the technology. And we've got 85% of smartphone users that will check their device when they're speaking with somebody. So this just like common etiquette now has become this like, oh, that's just what people do. And it's like, well, it doesn't have to be the norm. It is the norm, but it doesn't have to be the norm.
Yeah.
And so we've got to look at these statistics, which we offer as part of the science in this app, to really get people to understand that this is a significant shift that we're doing. These little moments of shifting our behaviors every single day, and these challenges that we offer people to kind of monitor their progress and see how it makes them feel. I think it's going to be really important, because for the first time in all my campaigning, it's so focused on the little shifts that create massive waves of, I guess, bringing you back to focus. You know, we've got industries now which are coming into the corporate world to teach people how to have eye contact again, because we've lost that ability to eye contact. Crazy. So we are coming back to some of those really beautiful moments of human experience with Lively that allows us to kind of have a way to embark on that again. And to express all the ways in which we can do that has been some of the most important work I think I'll ever do, because for me, it feels like I'm having fun again.
Yeah, that's so important. That is so, so, so important right now. And likewise, that's what I'm experiencing too, is the desire to engage with things that make me feel alive. Like,
yeah,
not having to remain in this box of an activist, influencer, creator, whatever that is, and just have fun with life. So it's beautiful. Or not, this was awesome, as was expected, of course. And every time I talk with you, I really love it. And ironically, we've only met digitally, so I can't wait for the day that we can finally meet in person. Got to get you over to the US and have you do a talk here or something. That'd be great.
I'd love that. I know that'll happen, Alec, for you and I, for sure. And I just want to say I'm cheering you on. I think what you're doing is absolutely amazing. I'm a massive supporter of everything that you put your heart and soul into, Alec. And thank you for, you know, just your morality as well. Like, you've got such high morality. Like, I know that sounds like, what does that even mean? But like, to go on a hero's journey, honestly, it takes so much courage. And that is the stories that we love the most. This is what Lively is about. It's about helping you start your engines and move towards your hero's journey and create more of a life that feels heroic and courageous. And, you know, whether you need to go upstream and sometimes you go downstream, just like enjoy the swim. Like,
just enjoy swimming.
Just swim.
Yeah. Good. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Renat.